This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts on what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Today's show is You're Never Too Old to Flirt. Flirting is like salt and pepper. Just a dash makes dinner so much more enjoyable. But if you try to flirt at 50, 60, or 70 the way you did at 20 or 30, you're going to look foolish and ridiculous. Today, Barbara Bellman, author of Flirting After 50, applies her marketing and branding skills to help us learn how women and men can flirt at 50, 60, and even 90 and 100. As Barbara put it, a good man isn't hard to find. It just takes a good woman to discover where he's hiding. And I gather the bait is flirting. Barbara, welcome.
Hi there. How are you?
Oh, terrific. So what motivated you to write Flirting After 50?
I heard so many negative comments about what happens to people once they turn 50. It's as though there's this great cutoff, this great divide that turns you into an unattractive, unappealing, disinterested person. And I didn't believe it. Even though people told me I should just give it up and buy a cat, I didn't think that was true. And I set out to prove it, and I have.
Wonderful. Is flirting just for single people, or is it for married people as well?
Well, I think if you want to have a successful marriage, I think that flirting needs to be a part of your daily routine anyway. My husband, who I met 3.5 years ago, whenever he calls me, I pick up the phone and he calls me and he goes, "Hello, gorgeous." Now, he doesn't need to do that, but he does that, and it makes me feel so good every time I talk to him. Those are the kinds of things that keep a love alive and keep a marriage vital and viable long into the senior years.
So the trick when you're married is that you need to flirt, but be careful whom you flirt with.
Well, if you're married, it helps to flirt with the one who brung you.
One of the things that impressed me about your book was that it's a lot about building up confidence, and it's a state of mind, and thinking you're desirable, and being playful. How come people don't get that?
I think that over time, it's like everything else. Over time, the invisible messages, the invisible negative messages, kind of tear at the fabric of your confidence. With each passing year, with each passing decade, with purchasing a 10X or 8X mirror, where you're a makeup mirror because you can't see very well, and you look in the mirror and you go, "Oh my God." I think that little by little, our confidence starts to wane, because as we continue to progress in our careers, we see younger and younger people coming up behind us who are ambitious and wanting to grow and wanting to move up. We see that little by little, things that used to work don't work as well in terms of our physical health. These messages constantly erode how we think of ourselves as remaining relevant. And then, of course, 50 comes and you get that big surprise from ARP that says,
oh,
"Hello, happy birthday, welcome to being a senior citizen."
The birthday card no one wants.
The birthday card that no one wants. It's like this nasty surprise. As if it wasn't bad enough you're turning 50, you get a reminder from ARP to join this growing organization. But once you get over that, and I think it's important that women do get over it, they start to realize that it's really an opportunity to reinvent yourself as the exciting, interesting woman you've become. And by the way, it applies to men as well.
Mm-hmm.
Men have their own level of insecurities. They just manifest them differently.
What kind of flirting works at 20 that's not going to work at 50?
Well, it's an interesting thing at 20. At 20, there's this game of hide and seek, hunt and peck, coquettish, you know, now you see me, now you don't kind of thing that goes on with younger people. And it's about playing and testing the waters and kind of seeing who's going to rise to the surface. In your younger years, men are full of testosterone, and part of it is the hunt, the conquest, the I want this person, and the woman can kind of dance in and dance out as it suits her. As you get older, the dance slows down. There isn't as much testosterone. There's a lot more baggage. And there have been situations where people have been wounded by divorce or rebuffed by former loves or saddened by the loss of a spouse to death, and they're not as resilient anymore. There's a lot more scar tissue. There's not so much bounce back, and so people are more cautious.
So without the testosterone-driven aspect to it, it's less about sex and more about egos and self-esteem.
It's less about sex, though please don't rule that out, because there are a lot of people that are in their senior years that are still enjoying a rather robust sex life. So I'm not saying that it's not about sex, but it's about so much more than sex. It's about companionship. It's about compatibility. It's about sharing the ups and downs of life, and there are maybe fewer ups and a lot more downs as we get older, and having someone that can share the journey. That's what it becomes about as we get older.
And women think that it's mostly about how attractive they are, whether they're going to get a good man. And for men, it's much more about having someone admire them, companionship. And I see research that says as men get older, they want a woman who's nice, meaning kind and considerate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you really bring up an excellent point. There are so many women that think that they have to continue to nip and tuck and look beautiful, and that as they get older, their job is to be arm candy for an older man. But the truth of it is, if you look around, a lot of the men who could pick anyone are picking women that are not necessarily arm candy, but they are beautiful on the inside. They're caring, compassionate, interesting women. They aren't necessarily the ingenues that they might have been at one time decades ago, but because they are interesting people, and more importantly, interested in the men and making the men feel like they're special and important, that's what they're looking for. They want somebody that will, in fact, go gently into that good night with them, not necessarily somebody that's going to make them feel inadequate to the task.
Are we men terribly inadequate that we need a lot of flattery and admiration in order to be interested in a woman?
I don't think so. I think it's a matter of how we grow. We have so many, men have a lot of insecurities as they get older. They have defined their power, their prowess, their relevance by their earning potential, their jobs, how fast they can run the ball down the hill. And as they get older and they can't run that ball down the hill, they can't maintain the same level of working 20-hour days and so forth, their earning potential may be declining, their health may be declining. They want someone who's not going to make them feel like their best days are behind them. It's natural.
Yeah. Well, what do women want then?
I think that women want someone with a good sense of humor that is going to make them look forward to each day. It doesn't have to be great wealth, but it has to be great kindness. I don't think that women are looking for Mr. Stud, although maybe some are. But I think that a lot of women, as they get older, are looking for someone who they can laugh with, who they can share things with, who they can take walks with. Just, they're looking for companionship, somebody who's going to make each day a pleasure instead of a drag.
It sounds a lot like what men are looking for, a kinder, considerate person that notices, admires them, pays attention to them. Not much difference.
Well, there's not much difference. It's just in the nuances. You know, a woman can be so happy with a gentleman bringing her a cup of coffee in the morning and telling her she looks lovely when she's sitting there thinking she looks old. And a man thrives under the gaze of a woman who looks at him as, I so enjoy your company, or I really love how you describe that book, or you're such a wonderful dancer, or I love being held in your arms when we dance. These are little things.
Mm-hmm.
They're little kindnesses, but they're opportunities to make a man feel still like he's needed and wanted and desirable.
When I hear somebody give a line like, what's a beautiful woman like you doing in a place like this? Oh, I just cringe, and that would turn me off instantly.
Yes, it would. It's not a good line. It never was a good line. But there are better lines, for instance.
Well, you kind of break it down into whether you want to be aggressive or subtle. What would an aggressive woman say?
Well, I would rather say, what would an assertive woman say rather than aggressive? An aggressive woman might look at a guy and say, you look hot. I'm interested in you. Okay, that may be a more aggressive way to approach it, and the man might find that really flattering. He also might find that a little bit uncomfortable. A more assertive way that still gets the same point across is if a woman looks at a man, makes eye contact, and honestly, sincerely says, you interest me. I'd like to get to know you better. Now, it's not coming across aggressively, but it is acknowledging that he's interesting to her. And who isn't flattered by that?
Mm-hmm. Or you're the most interesting person I've met all night.
Exactly. You look, of all the people in this room tonight, I want to talk to you. That's an assertive thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
And it's flattering and it's interesting. I can't imagine that anybody would possibly be rebuffed by that.
I doubt it. Now, for someone who is timid and would see that as over the top, how would you put it more subtly?
Are you talking about the woman or the man?
The woman.
If a woman is extremely timid, it's going to be difficult for her to probably find a way to make conversation flow so easily. But there are ways that a timid woman can let a man know that she's interested. Let's take a situation where she's at a party and she's interested in a man she perceives is available. She could sit next to him or get close to him in the food line or going up for a drink or looking at a book and comment to him something about the fact that I'm kind of uncomfortable when I come to these social situations because I don't really know how to begin a conversation. That lets him know that she's a little bit shy, but she's at least opened up a little bit of a conversation. And he can take it from there if he's interested.
So self-disclosure can be a good way for timid people.
Well, self-disclosure, a little self-disclosure is disarming, as long as it's not over-disclosing. And what I mean by that is coming out by saying, I don't know why I'm even here, because why would anybody bother talking to me? That's putting yourself down, that's making yourself look like you're inadequate, and somebody's going to say, well, yeah, maybe that's so. I don't know why they would either, and they move on. But if you put it in terms of, I'm a little bit uncomfortable here because I never quite know how to get things started, then you're not necessarily putting yourself down, but you're sharing a little bit about yourself. The other person, who's probably also just as insecure, might use that as an opportunity to say, you know, I have the same feelings. Mm-hmm. I never know where to start either. And then they're off to the races.
For a guy who wants to be assertive, how does he do that without coming across as a masher, a cad, a jerk?
Well, in this situation, I think less is more. I think that when men come off trying to be too aggressive, similar to the comment that you made before about what's a pretty woman like you doing in a place like this, it comes across as cheesy. But if a man looks at a woman and says, oh my gosh, it is lovely to look at you. Or, I was listening to you talk to this other person, and I really like how you think about things. Paying a genuine compliment is always, always going to be appreciated, much more than cheesy come-on lines. Nobody talks anymore about what's your sign or your place or mine. It just is inappropriate. But to be able to acknowledge somebody for something that you truly observe is interesting is a great way to open a conversation. I had one gentleman say to me a few years ago, he came up to me after I had been talking for a while to someone. He walked up to me afterwards and he said, I couldn't help but notice how you talk to someone. Your eyes don't scan the room looking around for somebody better to talk to. You were focused on that conversation, and I think that's interesting. And I thought that was a great compliment.
Mm-hmm.
I never forgot it. Of course, it reinforced a behavior that I was getting complimented for, and we began a nice conversation. Of course, I was extremely focused on making sure my eyes didn't scan the room looking for somebody better to talk to.
He had you trapped there.
What he was saying is that he liked the way I talked to people, and that made him an interesting person for me to talk to next.
So observing somebody and then commenting on it's one strategy, or when you were talking just before that, I think the key to the compliment is the more specific it is and the more it resonates as truth, the more effective it's going to be. You just say, oh, you're so beautiful. Somebody 60 years old is going to be thinking, oh, I've got all these wrinkles and that he's giving me a bunch of bull. But if you say, your eyes are just gorgeous, or that necklace you're wearing is stunning, or something like that, it's much more credible.
Exactly.
We'll get back to Barbara Bellman in just a moment. I take several supplements every day, but if I had to limit myself to just two, it would be a high-quality multiple vitamin and high-quality fish oil. Recommended by the American Heart Association, fish oil is vital to reducing inflammation, balancing our overconsumption of omega-6 fats, and protecting our heart and cardiovascular system. But just any old fish oil won't do, because inexpensive brands often contain lead, mercury, PCBs, and have oxidation. The leading researcher on fish oil is Dr. Barry Sears, who has spent decades studying, refining, and perfecting fish oil. Dr. Sears' Omega RX fish oil is the gold standard of fish oil. It starts with carefully selected small cod, goes through a rigid system of refining, and refining again, and then every single batch is tested for quality. I'm delighted to have Dr. Sears' Zone Labs as a sponsor, and delighted to offer you a limited-time 10% discount on your first order of his fish oil, vitamins, and weight loss products when you use the promotional code AGELESS. Just go to zonediet.com, that's zonediet.com, and use the promotional code AGELESS. Or you can call 1-800-404-8171 and use the promotional code AGELESS for your first order discount. That number again is 1-800-404-8171. And now back to Barbara Bellman.
If you use some of the same techniques you use when talking to children about their work or about what's interesting to them, if you can find something specific to admire, something specific that makes them feel like you're actually seeing them, that you're involved in it, as opposed to saying, well, gee, that's pretty, to say, you know, I like the way you used that color blue. Why did you do that? Give people an opportunity to talk about what they're talking about, instead what they're doing, instead of just stopping them. If you say to somebody, you're beautiful, what do they say? They'll say, thank you. Or they'll say, oh, whatever. But they're not going to, it's not going to open up a conversation. But if you say to somebody, how did you know to use that color? Or what made you use that particular word? Or I listened to you talking to someone and you used a phrase that I hadn't heard before. Those open up conversations. And that's really what good flirting over the age of 50 allows you to do, is it opens up the opportunity for more conversation. It doesn't mean that you're going to have a slam dunk opening that's going to guarantee that you're going to be going home with that person, but it gives you an opportunity to open up the conversation and see where it goes.
Which leads to one of the interesting points you make of the purpose of a first date is to get to the second date.
Yes.
Tell us what that's about.
Well, so many people think that the first date has to be the end-all and be-all, and that if you aren't in love by dessert, that it's been a waste of time. And I think it's really important for a lot of older people especially to realize they have to take their time. And a lot of people have said to me, well, I don't have that much time. I need to move on. I'm not going to waste my time. If this isn't going to turn into something, I don't want to waste my time. Well, that's so unfair to them, and it's unfair to the women or the men that they're visiting with. The purpose of the first date is to get to the second date, and if the first date is pleasant, then what you want to do is have another opportunity to get to know this person a little bit better. And the purpose of the second date is to get to the third date, because each time you build another opportunity to expose yourself to who they really are, you're building experiences together. You're building moments together. And before long, you can decide, well, I really like this person. I've seen this person for coffee. I've seen this person for a walk. I've seen this person at a movie. We've talked about this, and we've talked about that, and we've talked about that. And I still like this person. It makes you realize that you can either move forward into the relationship, or you might see something that you know you don't like, and you can nip it in the bud. But I have a chapter in the book called The Rule of Three, where I really recommend that people give every relationship three opportunities, three sort of touch points, if you will, to determine whether or not this is going anywhere or not. Because it's just so unrealistic to think that the first date is going to be the date that's going to tell you forever after.
So the mindset that you would have would be, I may see some total deal breakers on this if I find that he's married or terribly dishonest about something, or there's just something that I know would be unacceptable. I don't want to go on to the second date, but if it's just, oh, things were a little awkward or a little dull or something, it may just be the nervousness of a first date or getting off on the wrong foot. And
absolutely.
It's
absolutely
not easy to meet people. It's worth another chance.
Absolutely. It's interesting. I'll give you a couple of examples. Well, I'll give you three examples. A woman meets a guy for the first time in a restaurant, and the first thing that she says to open up the conversation is how she doesn't like sports fishing or hunting. Well, as it turns out, the man is a sport fisherman, and he does like hunting, and so without her realizing it, she let him know that this isn't going to go anywhere. They didn't get a second date.
Mm-hmm.
Another situation is a fellow that met a woman for breakfast, and before they could even order their meal, he had commented on several of his medical conditions, and some of them were not so pleasant. By the end of the breakfast, though, he thought, wow, I've got a future with this woman, because she didn't get up from the table and head for the hills. But this woman was just extremely pleasant, very polite, a good conversationalist, and she was not at all interested in seeing him again. Those are two situations where early on you learn that you don't necessarily want to take it any further. There was another situation where a woman had gone out with a guy for, I think, two or three times, and everything was lovely and pleasant, and he was charming. But then they went to a restaurant, and she saw how abusive he was to the wait staff.
Mm-hmm.
And that told her something about him. He was very charming to her, but the way he treated people that were in a subordinate position told her everything she needed to know about his character. But it took her a few dates to get to that point.
A good example of a deal breaker, whether it's first date or fifth date, because what you're ultimately wanting is that kind, considerate person who treats you well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there are going to be times when, as we get older, we're going to be feeling weaker or vulnerable. And if you're with somebody that does not have that sense of compassion to deal with people who are less fortunate, and you might be one of them, then you want to move on.
We're talking with Barbara Bellman, who's a marketing coach and consultant and author of two trade books on marketing to women. Today we're focusing on her more personal book, Flirting After 50, Lessons for Grown-Up Women on How to Find Love Again. It's a very readable book, big, big confidence builder, and the website is Flirting After 50, with 50 spelled out, F-I-F-T-Y, flirtingafter50.com. It's also available at the online bookstores and many bookstores as well. Barbara, is there a difference between marketing a product and marketing yourself?
Many of the essentials about marketing apply, whether it's individual or a product or an organization. One of the things that I refer to in the book, and one of the things that has helped me in formulating this book, is looking at certain key reasons why some products, if you will, and we'll look at ourselves mm-hmm. as products for a moment, why some products succeed and others don't. One of them is positioning, being at the right place at the right time with the right product. Another one is being the right product in terms of taking inventory, making sure that what you're presenting is authentic and valuable. If you look at those two aspects, those are similar, whether you're marketing a product or a service or a person. Marketing at positioning yourself for greatest success. If you want to find a great person who is sensitive and caring and nurturing and so forth, where are you going to find that kind of a person? Are you going to find that person necessarily in a biker bar? And I don't mean to say anything negative against bikers, because I know a lot of them are professional and wonderful people. But the implication here is that you want somebody who's got a little bit more sensitivity, and you don't want to necessarily go looking for it in a place where being rough and tumble and gruff and macho is de rigueur. If you want somebody who is looking for somebody like you, then what interests you? Where do you go to do the things that you enjoy doing? There are a lot of women that, when they find themselves single at the age of 50 or so, think that, okay, they want to find somebody who's successful and rich and well-connected, and so they think that the place that they're going to find them is at charity events and art galleries and wine tastings and fine restaurants and so forth. But that isn't necessarily where you're going to find somebody who's right for you. What they're doing is they're focusing more outward on, quote-unquote, the customer and less on the product. In marketing, I always have felt that when I've talked to my clients, I said, okay, our job is to tell people that you have a good product, but your job is to be the good product. So let's turn it back now to being the good product. If the kind of person that you want has certain characteristics that you admire, then you have to take inventory and look at whether or not what you offer, what you have, will attract somebody like that.
And being the good product would be both personality, being positive, being enthusiastic and passionate.
Well, let me talk about that for a minute. You bring up a very interesting point that I talk about in the book, and that has to do with energy. When people exude a positive energy, a positive attitude that says, life is good, life is interesting, I'm going to add something to the party, I'm going to add something to the conversation, people are drawn to that kind of a person. By the same token, if you are the kind of person that is depressed and down and sad and negative and everything's awful and you're angry, what do people do around somebody like that? They try to not be around somebody like that. So the kind of energy you bring into the equation will determine whether or not you're going to be drawing people to you. And this is something really important for people to understand. As you get older and you're feeling down or blue or inadequate, and you carry that around with you as like a shroud, people are not going to be drawn to that. But if you walk into a room with a smile and a positive attitude, and you talk to people and draw them out and make them feel special, people are going to be drawn to you like a magnet. You're going to have your choice. It's going to be an abundance of riches. But if you don't behave that way, if you come instead and come into a room with an attitude of, okay, make me happy. Make me happy. I dare you to make me happy. I dare you to make me enjoy this moment. Well, most people aren't quite up to that task.
So is this what you're calling product?
Well, I think it's part of the product. It's part of the product. It's part of the sizzle of the product.
What else goes with the product?
The product is who you are authentically. I use an expression that I heard years ago that says, nothing helps a bad product fail faster than good advertising. And I use that because a lot of times women and men will present themselves as something that they're not. And they do this a lot in online dating, in online trolling, where they will post pictures of someone else, or they'll post pictures of themselves when they were 100 pounds lighter and 10 years younger. What's the point of trying to misrepresent yourself? You want to represent yourself as authentic, but represent the better qualities that you can own. But that requires that you have to actually take inventory and look at those things that work for you and those things that don't. And sometimes there are some negative things about ourselves that we have to work to get rid of. An example is somebody who maintains that they're stuck in their ways. I don't want to do this. I don't want to go there. I won't try something new. Don't try and change me. These kinds of attitudes are very off-putting, because if you're going to meet somebody new, they're going to be bringing something new to your life. Maybe they like rock and roll music and you like classical. Well, are you going to reject them because they have different tastes? Why not see if you can find common ground? Sometimes you can go to theirs and they can go to yours, and you might find something else to enjoy together. But when you come forth with such a rigid stance on this is who I am and don't try to change me, and I'm looking for somebody who's actually going to be just a mirror image of myself, well, there's nothing interesting in that. There's no tension, there's no dynamic in that.
You might not enjoy that person if you met him anyway.
Probably not. In fact, I guess there is something about opposite attract.
So this is the product part of it. Is the third point knowing who you want to attract?
You have to know the audience that's right for you. If you know yourself, then you know, you have a better idea of what kind of people you're going to be interested in meeting. If you can be yourself, if you can really be your best authentic self, and get out there, get out in the world and do the things that you enjoy doing, then the kind of people that are attracted to you are going to notice that. But if you try and plant yourself in situations where you don't really know the territory, you don't really know the audience, and you can't really demonstrate who you actually are, you're kind of squandering the moment. It's in advertising and marketing, we call that being in the right media milieu. You want to put your product in the right publications or the right radio stations in order to attract the kind of people that would buy your product. You don't want to go where your audience isn't.
Besides not being authentic and not positioning themselves well, what kind of mistakes do you see people make when they're trying to flirt or trying to date?
Well, there are a few. I think that one of the things that older people tend to do in dating is they don't make an effort to make themselves presentable. Their grooming is lax. Their personal hygiene may be lacking. They talk about themselves too much and not enough about the other person. They become very egocentric. Try and pull focus. You see it in some conversations. You'll see it in couples, for instance, where people will be talking about something and maybe one person introduces a topic and somebody will jump in and pull focus away from that before the person gets a chance to make their point or finish their story. This other person is now taking it and making it all about them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a distraction. It's an irritation. It's terribly annoying. I see that happening all the time. I know one woman that went out with a fellow who was interested in her, but she didn't know why, because the entire time they were together for lunch, he talked nothing about her and everything about himself. It was all I, me, and then, you know, enough about you, let's talk about me. And at the end of the lunch, he said to her, I'd love to see you again. And she looked at him and said, why? You know nothing about me. You didn't ask one thing about me. Why on earth would you be interested in seeing me again?
It's amazing how many of these principles are the same in dating as in business and selling any product or service.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We tend to think that these are discrete areas, but how you show up as a person, you do this either in business or you do it personally. It's really the same thing.
One of the things you talk about is, yes, we've had women's liberation and women very successful in business, but most men still want to take the lead role and most women still want a man to take the lead role. You mentioned some complaints. What am I supposed to be, smart by day and dumb at night? How do you balance that?
There was a comment that somebody said to me. She says, oh, I can't be smart all day and dumb all night, talking about whether or not she wanted to meet a fellow to go out with. She was a successful publicist who had been married several times, actually, and she was done with all of that, or so she said. But that was a comment that she had made. But the situation about liberated women, successful liberated women, is that as we get into our 40s and 50s, we're kind of hitting our stride economically, we're hitting our stride professionally, and men don't quite know how to fit into that equation. They don't know how to make themselves needed. they don't know whether or not they can ever establish the fact that they can fill a gap because they don't see any gaps there. It's really important for women to understand that they don't have to constantly be the CEO in every relationship. They can let a man take the lead, and it doesn't diminish them at all. In my professional career, I had situations where I would have to host a client, for example, at dinner. And I knew that the host was going to want to pick up the tab, and yet I felt like it was my place to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But the way I would handle it in a situation like that so that he wouldn't feel diminished or that I was trying to one-up him is I would suggest, you know, can I buy the wine? You know, if you know how to pick the wine, why don't you select the wine and let me buy it? I would love to do that. Or I would do it in advance, and I would make arrangements for the meal to be handled in advance, just to say, let's not argue about it. But that's in a business context. Personally, when I'm out to dinner with someone, if they're going to reach for the check, I'm not going to fight it. I'm not going to fight for it. I'm going to let them do that. Not because I can't pay it, not because I'm trying to be stingy or grasping, but because there are not that many ways for men today to show that they can be heroic or gallant, that they can step up to the plate. And it might be an old-fashioned way to consider these little gallant moments, but having a man open the door or help you with your chair or help you on with your coat or these little moments just show that he is trying to be somewhat chivalrous, trying to be a little bit of the hero for the moment. For a woman to take that away from him and say, I can open my own car door and whip out the credit card, you know, and it's platinum or something, that does nothing for furthering that relationship. All she's doing is diminishing him and sending a message that she can do it all, and she can do it all alone quite nicely, thank you, and he'll get the message.
We'll get back to Barbara Bellman in just a moment. I knew from increasingly convergent sources that inflammation is the key to most chronic diseases, including heart disease, arthritis, diabetes, and obesity. When I read Dr. Barry Sears' bestseller, Toxic Fat, and when I interviewed Dr. Sears, I was amazed at how his meticulous research tied it all together. Dr. Sears, the developer of the Zone Diet, has been studying metabolism, healthy eating, and fish oil for decades. The centerpiece of his research is his Omega RX fish oil supplements. Nobody has studied fish oil more, and no one is more conscientious about carefully selecting small cod, refining it again, and testing every single batch. You can't get safer, better, or more potent fish oil anywhere. I'm delighted to have Dr. Sears' Zone Labs as a sponsor and delighted to offer you a limited-time 10% discount on your first order of his fish oil, vitamins, and weight loss products. Just go to zonediet.com, that's zonediet.com, and use the promotional code AGELESS. Or you can call 1-800-404-8171 and use the promotional code AGELESS for that first order discount. That number again is 1-800-404-8171. And now back to Barbara Bellman. One of the interesting suggestions you had was to let him know that you view this as a date. That has the effect of...
Well, when a woman talks to a man at a social function and she views it as a date, what she's letting him know is that this is social, that this is not just a business transaction and it's not just a friend that I'll see ya. That she's looking at it, she's raising it to a importance than just coffee. That puts him on notice that this is something that she's taking a little bit more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
If a woman says to a guy, look, this is just coffee, or, you know, I'll drive there in my car, you drive there in your car, and we'll just, you know, hook up for a few minutes and have a conversation, that lets him know this isn't going anywhere. But if she lets him know that this is a little bit of a date and that she's thinking about it that way, that gives it a different spin on the story.
Of I hope it's going somewhere or this may go somewhere.
That's right.
Now, you also say that a lot of women are working too hard, baking casserole, home cook, you know, bringing the cookies over and all that. When is too much too much?
When is too much too much? Interesting. I had a situation where I was asked out on a date or by a fellow who had lost his wife a year earlier, and he invited me over to his house. I walked into the house, and I could tell that he was the kind of person that a lot of women were showing a lot of attention to. And I made the comment kind of flippantly. I said, "So how many casseroles do you have in the freezer?" And he turned around and looked at me. He goes, "A lot." Well, for me, I'm thinking to myself, I'm not going to add to the casseroles. I'm not going to be the kind of person that's going to be coming over here with, you know, my apron and my casserole and, you know, wink, wink, call me later. Because I could tell by his attitude that he found it to be overwhelming and actually uncomfortable. I mean, how's he going to reciprocate? He can't fall in love with all of them. He's not going to date all of them. So what he does is he thanks them very much, tells them how much he enjoyed it, and that's the end of that. I think that women tend to go overboard in showing their attention, and they don't realize that there are other women that are also showing their attention. My recommendation is to show interest in someone genuinely, but not by doing or giving, but by being present, being interested, being a good conversationalist, letting them talk. Years ago, I was at an event. A man had been a very successful CEO of a publicly traded company, and he was ousted. And I knew it. I had read in the papers that he had been ousted, and it was embarrassing, although he did get a nice golden parachute. But we were standing in the hors d'oeuvre line, and I turned to him and I said, "Are you uncomfortable with this hiatus from being so successful and so in the moment of your prime time and now being sort of in between engagements?" And he turned to me like I had just cracked him open. And it wasn't that profound a question, but but that's where he was. And he turned to me, he said, "Nobody's asked me that question, and that is a very," and he says, "I am really, really dealing with that. I'm really trying to grapple with that." And that allowed us to go into a whole interesting conversation, which was more than me saying to him about, you know, "Hey, if you're not busy Saturday," or "Here's my number, give me a call if you, you know, when you want a shoulder to cry on." It wasn't that. I was able to actually open him up in a way that let him know that I was a shoulder to cry on without me having to say that.
Well, and that's back to an astute observation that really connected well. And back in your casserole scenario, as I think about it, it strikes me that some men might feel that it was kind of more like mother bringing the cookies over rather than someone he would want to date.
Well, there are a lot of thoughts about the fact that men, in fact, do want a mother as they get older. They want somebody who's going to be nurturing and caring and so forth. But I don't necessarily, unless you have casserole charming that is, you know, going to knock them off their socks, I don't think that's necessarily the way to win them over. It communicates that you're caring and nurturing, but when you have several people coming over doing the same thing, it comes across as a bit predatory.
And now we're back to marketing, that you need to be unique too, I guess.
Yes.
One of the things that can be tricky about dating after age 50 is that you've got kids who may not be happy about you dating. How do you handle his kids or your kids?
Well, that's a very sticky subject, and it's probably unique case by case. But the reality is that when you get older and you are looking for love, your grown-up children are worried that you're going to either be hurt or exploited, or that you're going to somehow mismanage the inheritance that they think that they're entitled to. Depending upon the age of the children, you might also be dealing with challenges of them being worried that they're going to lose the affection and lose the attention of the parent. So these are all things that you have to navigate. One of the things that I caution people about is to not share their personal realities of their dating situations with their children, because people don't necessarily need, your children don't need to necessarily know that you've got a sexual relationship going on, or that you are concerned about being hurt and so forth. They don't need to know. it's best to just leave things privately if you're dating and there are adult children involved. Keep your relationship private. Keep it quiet until you know that you're going to be moving it to the next very serious level. Until that point, the less said, the better.
I like the way you put it. If you break a hip, your kids will be there for you. If your heart's broken, you need other friends. And I think one of the worst examples of this, I love Desperate Housewives. Terry Hatcher, the Susan character, keeps sharing all her intimacies with her teenage daughter and asking her advice. And it's just so inappropriate. And then she can't understand why she has so much difficulty getting her daughter to do what she wants her to do and setting limits with her daughter.
Well, yes. The reality is that when you're older, you're supposed to be the grown-up, and your kids don't necessarily want to see you in the romantic role. I'm not saying that there aren't some adult children that are mature and can handle it, but for the most part, none of us really want to see our parents in the sack or in a sexual situation. And that's, of course, where their minds go in the relationship. They also don't want to see, if they have lost a parent to death, and they see the surviving parent now finding new love, that's going to make them feel uncomfortable as well. They're going to feel a sense of betrayal, and is it betraying the parent that they lost and so forth. So there's a lot of emotional baggage that surrounds that. The less said, the better. I have a grown son that's 41, and we have a great relationship, and we can talk about anything. I was telling him that I did an interview on the book where somebody was talking to me about sexuality and the older woman. And he says, stop. I don't even want to hear it. Don't go there. He said, I'm putting my fingers in my ear, la, 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 la. He didn't want to, it was hard for him to even think of me talking about it, let alone doing it. And now thinking that I'm somehow going to be talking to other people about it made him very uncomfortable.
All you have to do is think about your parents having sex and how uncomfortable that probably makes you feel, and you get the idea.
Yes, absolutely. Grown children are less concerned about the sexuality aspects of it than they are about the financial aspects of it. Mm. I think that people are really concerned with whether or not you're going to be hooking up with a fortune hunter or whether or not they're going to be losing the affection of the parent who's forging a new relationship. Those two actually trump the awkwardness of whether or not mom or dad is now getting back in the game.
So you wade into those Thanksgiving dinners and Christmas dinners very gingerly and with a lot of sensitivity.
I think in this situation, less is more. The less you tell your kids about what's going on in your relationship, the better off it'll be. Until you're ready to make it more formal, until you're ready to make it permanent, don't keep dragging every new person into every family situation. And don't assume that your kids are going to embrace it. Don't assume that they're going to say, sure, we'll be happy to welcome you. It's not necessarily so.
We've been talking with Barbara Bellman, author of Flirting After 50, Lessons for Grown-Up Women on How to Find Love Again. I think it's also helpful for men because you have to know both sides of the dialogue and, or if you prefer, of the marketing. And in reading the book, it's just a wonderful confidence builder that really clears out a lot of the beliefs that we often compile about you're too old for this and it's undignified and you can't do it, and who would want somebody who's bald and paunchy or who's 60 and getting some wrinkles and put on a few pounds. Wonderful book. And the website is flirtingafter50, with 50 spelled out, .com. Barbara, thank you. I think it's just a very helpful idea, and it's amazing how it's common sense, but common sense isn't often common.
It's true. It's true. Common sense isn't often common. I hope that your listeners and the readers will appreciate some of the tips and insights in the book, because I think that if you want love in your senior years, you can certainly find it.
Excellent point, and thank you for sharing.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Commentary. What can we say about our interview with Barbara Bellman? One of my favorite quotes comes from publisher Frances Lear, who said, I can sit next to a man who has a gorgeous 20-year-old sitting on his side, and he'll talk to me every time because I'm more interesting. Whether you're single or married, flirting adds spice and panache to your life. If you're looking for love, flirting's the bait. And while it's easy to sell oneself short with no one would be interested in a paunchy, balding man or an overweight woman with wrinkles, the rules in our 50s and older changed. While many seniors are quite sexually active, it's a lot less about hot sex and more about companionship, someone who understands, someone who cares, someone who's kind, and someone who makes you feel good. How does Barbara Bellman do it? First, she overcomes the excuses and objections. Then she has you focus on everyone's favorite radio station, WIFM, What's in It for Me. That is, focusing on getting to know the other person rather than talking about yourself. How to break the ice? It's as easy as a compliment, an astute observation about the person, or some self-disclosure. The more specific and insightful, the better. Finally, the marketing part also calls for being at places where you will have the opportunity to meet the kind of people that you would truly enjoy having as a friend. The rest is commentary. How to get the second and third date, how to handle family, and how to handle traditional versus liberated roles. Of course, if you haven't been doing it much, like anything new, it's often clumsy at first, but the more you do it, the better you get at it, then the more fun it is. Emails. I love getting emails. Send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. That's radio@agelesslifestyles.com. Last week's program with Judy Strong on how to be prepared for losing a loved one got me the label of being the adult version of the Boy Scouts. Be prepared. Matter of fact, some accountants told me that tax time is a good time to spend a little extra time to get all those documents organized. The wills, the living wills, the insurance policy information, the marriage certificates, the IRA information, the pension information, etc., both in case of an unexpected death and in case of a disaster like fire, flood, hurricane, and theft. Not only do you want to have them at your home, you want to have a copy of them at a safe off-site location, too, in case everything is damaged or lost. I was also delighted to have people write and say how pleased they were to hear grieving described as something that you work through and get on with, as opposed to something that was never-ending torture for the rest of your life. If you have comments on any of the programs or want to share some of your experiences with flirting after 50, or if you have questions about next week's topic, how to get a job even when there's a recession, just send me an email at radio@agelesslifestyles.com. I'd like to again thank our sponsor, Dr. Barry Sears' Zone Labs. And a reminder, you can get a 10% discount on their weight loss products, fish oil, and other supplements by going to zonediet.com. That's zonediet.com. Or calling 1-800-404-8171 and using our promotional code AGELESS. That's 1-800-404-8171 and the promotional code AGELESS. For information on my free Defy Aging newsletter, my books, hypnosis CDs, speaking services, and personal coaching services, you can just go to notaging.com, N-O-T-A-G-I-N-G.com, or drbricky.com. Until next week, this is your anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricky, thanking you for joining us on our quest to live longer, healthier, and happier.